France gets a bum rap. Many Americans see it as a minefield of faux pas and cultural oddities. But when you understand their culture, I find the French people are just as warm and welcoming as any other. Hi, I'm Rick Steves. My guests today are two French tour guide friends, one from the north and the other from the south. Sabine Le Tentouillet and Patrick Vidal spend their summers guiding Americans through France. But today, they are here to give us an inside look and a better understanding of French culture. Sabine and Patrick will tell us about some of the regional differences within France and how their country's been influenced by its neighbors. They'll explain how France aims to preserve its own sense of identity in an increasingly globalized world, where it often seems they've been lashed by Levi's and smashed by the Big Mac of American culture. Coming up, it's French Culture 201 for the American Traveler. Plus, we're taking your calls on some of the best and worst foods you've experienced in your travels. It's all just ahead as we travel with Rick Steves. Travel with Rick Steves is brought to you by American Airlines. With their new Advantage Award booking tool, it's easier than ever to book to over 800 Advantage Award destinations online at AA.com. American Airlines knows why you fly. Hi, I'm Rick Steves, and it's time for a peek at the intricacies of French culture that challenge so many of us American travelers. Let's call it French Culture 201, coming up on today's Travel with Rick Steves. But first, let's start with your calls at 877-333-RICK. That's 877-333-7425, as we pose the question, what are some of the most interesting foods and drinks you've experienced in your travels? I'll never forget cracking that raw egg onto my rice for breakfast in Kyoto. Or the Bulgarian who showed me how the eyes of the goat head were actually the most prized delicacy. And the barnacles you eat like beer nuts with your drink in Portugal. What was your best dining experience on the road? What was the worst? I'd love to hear your stories at 877-333-7425 or by email radio@ricksteves.com. And Susie on the line in Gambrillis, Maryland. Hi, Susie.
Hi there. How are you?
Great. Thanks for your call. Tell us some of your food memories.
Well, we have a lot. My husband and I consider ourselves foodies, and we try not to rule out anything when we eat other than we both have the motto of take us not to the house of organs. We're not fond of organ meat.
Ooh, there's a reason to have a phrase book right there.
So we do travel with your phrase books with us, and we were in Paris, and we were trying to follow your philosophy of don't give in to jet lag. Just keep moving, keep going, try to get acclimate yourself as quickly as possible. So we also had in our hip pocket some places to eat from my husband's cousin, who was a French professor and did a lot of exchange work in Lyon, but always spent a few days in Paris and even built a bread oven, you know, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So we went to some of his favorite restaurants, and so, you know, we're jet-lagged, we're tired, and we get there, and I pull out my phrase book. Neither of us speak French. I took foreign language for singers in college, so unless you sing it in operetta, I couldn't order it.
Foreign language for singers?
Yes.
Interesting. See, I have that problem because the Italian I speak is piano Italian. You know, I can say andante or lento.
Largo.
Con brio, por favore.
Yes. So we get there at the fashionably appropriate time, 8:30, 9 o'clock, and the bistro is very crowded and all locals. And so we sit down and there's no menu. He just brings us a chalkboard. And so I'm trying to look at my little menu guide, phrase guide in my purse and just pull it out. I said, oh, they know we're tourists at this point. And I finally found something that sort of corresponded to the chalkboard, and I said, okay, this is it. This is veal stew. This will be good. And so ordered it for my husband, ordered something else for myself. Well, it came to our table, and it was beautifully arranged. Obviously not a stew. It was a salad with slices of meat on top of it, but it looked suspiciously like a very rich meat. And what we had ordered was veal, I believe the pronunciation is rognon, veal kidneys.
Mm. And well, that's a rich meat.
Yes. And you're hungry and you're tired, but not that hungry.
Oh, boy, that's, you know, with my wife, we like to have an experience, but we don't like to order two things that we just can't stomach. So oftentimes we'll order one high risk and one low risk.
Well, I got the frites.
And you're stuck with the steak and fries when you do that. But, you know, when you're in France, they really have a passion for their organs, don't they? They're sweet meats.
Nothing is wasted.
Nothing's wasted. And I'm kind of queasy about a lot of those, but the salad gizé, is that what you call it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally like gizzard salad, and it is delightful. It's rich, it's beautiful, and it's one of the things that I look for on a French menu.
An acquired taste.
An acquired taste, that's right. Hey, Susie, thanks for your call.
No problem.
Happy travels.
Bye.
And Barry from Corvallis, Oregon. Hi, Barry.
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
I'm doing good. I'm hearing about people's terrible food experiences. You got something that can brighten my day a little bit? Tell me about good food.
Absolutely. Well, you know, in London on the train, went through the tunnel on your Flex Pass in 97 when they first opened it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But the German trains, of course, are all good, and the food is always excellent. You must have the soup, which you probably have had many times yourself.
You're talking about soup on the train. You actually ate on the train and had a good meal?
Absolutely.
Interesting.
The train out of Frankfurt going through the Black Forest. Lentil and sausage soup was the best soup I had throughout Europe, as a matter of fact.
Because, you know, I got to say, Barry, I walk through the dining car on the trains and I think, this must be overpriced. But you do see a lot of local people that seem to know what they're doing and they're eating very well.
Absolutely. And myself, I like the perspective you have of the affordability, obviously, in all your travels, which is really an attitude. And for me, it takes training.
Well, yeah, you got to.
Because I tend to overspend, you know.
Yeah. Now, did you eat well in France?
Yes. And France, I was at Moët and Chandon in Epernay as a guest. And it's one of the finest dining experiences of my life.
Wow.
And it's a non-restaurant. It's by invitation only. After taking the tour of the caves at Moët Chandon, you know, they have Chateau de Saran out in the countryside.
Okay, let's catch our listeners up to speed on this. You're talking about Moët et Chandon. That's the top sort of most prestigious French champagne cave that you can tour, I think.
Exactly.
In the town of Epernay.
Epernay in the Champagne region.
Yeah, it's just a couple hours out of Paris, and it's near Reims, the town where...
Exactly.
Now, remember, there's champagne made all over Europe, but you can only call it champagne if it's made in the region of Champagne. And
that's
Epernay
correct.
Is the champagne capital. That's where that monk who invented it ran through the monastery halls, telling his brothers, brothers, come quickly, I'm drinking stars. Can you imagine that?
Well, they have a nice little story that, you know, Moët sells as part of their Dom Perignon product they're well known for.
I'm a sucker for that story, Barry. And you actually ate well there.
Well, you're not alone there.
All right.
The beauty of the chateau is every morning when you get out of your room, there's a bottle of vintage Brut Moët waiting and a pitcher of orange juice on the coffee table. You know, it's just an experience to behold.
You got to know some
champagne. The dining was excellent. And, you know, it's a typical 7-course French meal that is gratis when you're, you know, invited.
You know, that's interesting that you say that, because the only time I've been to a classy French dining experience, I was being honored by the mayor of one of the arrondissements in Paris, where I've sent a lot of business through my guidebook in this Rue Claire area, you know. And she invited me to the palace, and they pulled out the most delightful little finger foods and pastries.
Exactly.
And I didn't realize food could be so good. And now that you mention it, it's just this, you become more of an elite when you're invited away from the restaurants and you're just
exactly.
part of a special festival or a grand party.
Exactly. In fact, I had the privilege to sleep at their Chateau de Saran after we had 24 people come for dinner in a white glove, you know. Comped meal, it was par excellence. In fact, I was a little apprehensive of the gar that was being served out of the local river, you know, because there's so much pollution throughout Europe in general.
The gar, is that a fish?
The gar, you know, it's a fish called gar.
Did you get sick?
It's like a fresh one. No,
okay.
It was excellent.
Well,
it turned out
good.
to be very good, and what I had trouble getting used to was every time I turned around and put my fork down, it would disappear.
How
and
so?
I never saw the waiter in the room, you know, be replaced by another one. It's an experience. I'll have to
talk
to my friends in the wine business. I'll see what I can do for you.
You're not learning many tips for the budget traveler, Barry. Hey, thanks for
It was comp.
It was comp.
It was free.
You need to write a guidebook on free Europe for the aristocracy. Barry, thanks for your call, Barry.
Hey, thank you, Rick.
All right, happy
My
travels.
All and
right.
I love your services.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
I hope to.
Thank you.
877-333-RICK. That's 877-333-7425. Or send us an email. It's easy. Just send us an email at radio@ricksteves.com. Let us know what you're thinking. Email us, radio@ricksteves.com. And Sandy's on the line here from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. I got some food stories for us.
Yes. Actually, mine are more related to drinking.
Oh, tell me.
The best mojito I've ever had, surprisingly enough, I had in Cuba. And I can't seem to get one as good anywhere in the States, although they are very trendy right now.
Mojito. I'm not very trendy. What is a mojito?
Well, it's kind of the Cuban version of, if you're familiar with mint julep, except that it's made with rum and it's made with lime juice. It's very good.
Okay, so you were in Cuba.
I was.
And did our president know that you were in Cuba?
I hope not. I don't think he would appreciate that.
How did you get there?
I went through Toronto.
Good for you. I think it's the number one destination in the Caribbean for Canadians.
I would believe that.
Did you feel like you were doing something wrong by going against American restrictions about us going there for trying the mojitos?
You know, that wasn't the reason that I went. I actually went to experience some of the people and actually get outside of the resorts, but I didn't actually feel like I was doing anything wrong while I was there. And I met some wonderful people. I can't say that the food was as good as the drink, but I think that is a lack of basic good raw materials.
Yeah, but I understand the Cuban rum's pretty good.
Oh, it was very good. I highly recommend it.
So you're saying once you get back after having your Cuban mojitos, it's just not the same in the States?
It's not. And a couple weeks ago, I was in Mexico City, and I had the same experience with the margaritas. So
isn't
there
that
you go.
Something? Yeah, you know, that's one bad thing about travel is it's just not right when you get home.
Right.
Hey, Sandy, when you were in Cuba, did you find that the seafood was any good? Were you able to get a good meal?
The only place that we were able to actually get seafood was in a Apolidar and someone's home. As you have mentioned before, that's one of the restaurants that people put in their home that has restricted number of seats. And the Cubans aren't real fond of seafood as a rule.
That's what I've heard, is that they just sort of turn their back on the sea from a cuisine point of view.
They do. They would much rather have beef, which is probably not good for the landscape, but will settle for pork or chicken. They're just not as likely to eat seafood. And, you know, they would do very well serving it mm-hmm. to the people that do come to visit.
So generally you're saying the food situation in Cuba was not that great.
No, it was. It really wasn't. And we were glad that we brought things with us because we were able to share things yeah. like trail mix and candy with some of the people that we met, and they really enjoyed yeah. it.
You know, I've been in countries farther south in Central America, and especially during tough times when they've got some civil unrest and so on, and it's even fancy restaurants have a very limited menu, and we used to joke that, you know, you go to a nice restaurant and you get a choice, rice and beans or beans and rice, and it was literally that.
That's true.
Yeah, but at least they got the good mojitos.
That's right.
All right. Thanks, Sandy.
Thank you.
And happy travels.
Thank you.
There's a lot to uncover about France. We're exploring the ins and outs of Francophilia, just ahead on Travel with Rick Steves. Travel with Rick Steves is brought to you by American Airlines, with 4,000 flights to 250 cities in some 40 countries around the world every day. It's easy to book your next flight at AA.com. American Airlines knows why you fly.
Utazok Rick Stevesen. I'm Ben Curtis, and I used to live in Budapest. That was Hungarian for I Travel with Rick Steves. Utazok Rick Stevesen. Köszönöm szépen.
Bonjour. I'm Rick Steves, and this is Travel with Rick Steves, and today we're traveling through the minefield of French culture for the American traveler. We want to understand the most complex and, I think, rewarding culture that you can become an expert in your travels. When you travel through France, the more you understand the French, the more fun you're going to have, and the more you're going to like the French people that you encounter. And I've got two good friends of mine here from France. We've got Patrick Vidal from Gascony, in the near the Spanish border in France, but living in Brittany now, and Sabine Letuntier. Is that correct? Please, tell me your name, Sabine.
Letuntier. Sabine Letuntier.
This is one of the problems with the French language.
No, it's your problem.
It's my problem. Very good. So, Sabine, thank you for joining us. And you're from Languedoc?
Yes, I'm originally from Paris, and I live now in the Languedoc region, which is just above the Spanish border on the Mediterranean.
All right. And Patrick, Gascony. Tell me about Gascony.
Gascony is the area down southwest of France. It's the deep French southwest. And that's the region where comes from the foie gras, all the food with ducks and all that kind of thing.
There. Cassoulet?
Very, very nice. Cassoulet. Cassoulet is a little bit more central than that but
okay.
Not very far.
So the south of France. And today you live in Brittany.
Today I live in Brittany, yeah.
And that's not French at all. It's Celtic, right?
It's different, yeah. I mean, France is different all over. I mean, diversity in France is the big, big thing. I mean,
that is.
If you're next to the Spanish border, you've got paella and bullfights. If you go to Nice, you've got pizzas.
So
if you go to Alsace, you've got beer.
Yeah. So you say "Vive la différence."
Vive la différence.
What does that mean when you say that? I mean, I know it means here's for the let's celebrate the difference. But what do you mean when you say that to somebody?
But you know, in fact, this sentence is not that much used in France. I mean, it's kind of it's more of a cliche than mm-hmm. anything else. People will not necessarily use the sentence to say to people you're right to be different or whatever. I mean, it's not very used that
no.
much, this sentence.
But you enjoy the differences.
Of course. I mean, to me, traveling through France is almost traveling through Europe, just speaking the same language.
So true, isn't it? France is the size of Texas, but you're right in the middle. So you're bordering, you got Italian culture in the Riviera.
You have the Italian culture. We are surrounded by the sea. You know, we really look to the sea. Basically, in France, you know, that's the ocean. I mean, we are the tip of the Western
so you've got
continent.
You've got the Italians. You've got a lot of Italian influence in the Riviera. Mm-hmm. You've got a lot of Spanish influence down mm-hmm. In Gascony, where you're from,
mm-hmm.
Patrick.
Celtic yeah. influence in Brittany.
You got the Irish connection right across the way.
Absolutely, yeah.
With Brittany. And you've got a lot
Flemish
of
in the northern part.
Yeah.
And the Germans on Alsace.
And Germany.
There's
Alsace.
Five regional languages in France.
What are those?
So you have the Breton, where actually Patrick is from.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Alsacien, the Alsace,
right.
You know, just bordering the Rhine mm-hmm. and Germany. You have, where I live, the Occitan, the L'Occitan,
mm-hmm.
the Languedoc,
right.
The Occitan. You have the Corse language, you know, Corsica.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually
Corsica, right.
Corsica that we don't often talk about, but that has a very strong regional culture. We have the Basque.
All right.
And actually, we have another one, which is the Provençal.
All right. And these are more distinct than a lot of travelers would realize.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the American comes in, it's just France. But for you
yes.
guys, it's...
You can tell, for example, I'm not originally from the Languedoc region. And believe me, as soon as I speak, they know that I'm one of those invaders from Paris.
Is that right?
Oh, yes. You know, that southern accent is very strong. The country, as you said, you know, is the size of Texas, and there's diversity. There's diversity in the culture, in the region, but also as far as the climate, as far as the geography, because we have three mountain ranges.
Right.
I think until people really come to France and really travel through France, it's very difficult to quite realize how a country that size can have, you know, four different climates.
With all these regions, you can characterize these regions. If I say a region, tell me in a nutshell what comes to mind. Bordeaux.
Mm. Wine.
Wine. Burgundy.
Wine.
Loire.
Oh, we can say wine.
Okay. We're going to start over. You can't say wine. There's wine from every region. Okay. Something other than wine.
Okay.
Bordeaux.
Bordeaux. Well, Bordeaux is just kind of a really A downsized Paris.
Downsized Paris. Okay,
downsized
that's interesting.
Paris.
Burgundy.
I mean, beautiful, beautiful buildings, but mm-hmm. also very good wine, which really doesn't take anything away from the buildings.
Okay, so Bordeaux, we can break the rule. Wine.
Okay. Wine, okay.
Okay, Burgundy.
Burgundy, the image of France. What the foreigners have got as an image of France would be Burgundy, rolling hills. And very, very quiet landscape. And okay.
Like we
and
say profound, or do you say profound France?
Yeah, France profonde, yeah.
La mm-hmm. France profonde. That yeah, would be quintessential good. France, Burgundy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Loire Valley.
The chateau.
Yeah, the chateaus.
You know, really the Renaissance.
And you have chateaus from every age there.
Yes, really. It's really the gardens of France. You know, it really borders, again, the Loire. Just a wonderful soil.
Beautiful from a production point of view, but also beautiful, elegant palace gardens and so on also.
Yes, yes.
It's also the cradle of French language. I mean, the
cradle of the French language. Okay.
If you think of a BBC French accent,
right.
That's the Loire Valley accent.
Loire, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Brittany.
Brittany? Oh, Celtic rules. It's just like festivals and parties and mysteries, stories and
bagpipes
and lace
bonnets.
Put the music on and you think you're in Ireland. I mean, there's no question about it.
Cider.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Normandy.
Oh, the three C's.
Tell me what the three C's are. You've told me many times.
Cider, Calvados, Camembert.
Cider. Calvados.
No, this is a cliche. This is a Rick Steve cliche.
Okay, tell me what Normandy is for
Normandy, just rolling, you know, just green pastures. Cows, actually.
Okay, dairy. Dairy.
Really large.
Okay, Camembert.
Very, very beautiful. Very pastoral views.
Provence.
Sun. Big skies. Small villages.
Cicadas.
Crickets.
No.
Cicadas. What are those
they
things?
They go...
Little insects.
Like crickets. Like,
yeah, they're...
Like
they,
sort of French... But, crickets with a French accent.
Yeah, but they're prettier than crickets.
Okay, pretty crickets.
Pretty crickets.
Elegant French crickets. What's the word again?
Cigales. Which is actually the good luck charm of Provence.
And you can hear them. They're like millions of them in the
unfortunately,
trees.
Unfortunately, yes. When they start...
They have become the symbol of Provence nowadays. If you start a movie anywhere and you want to show that it's Provence, just put the sound of the crickets behind and everybody knows, it's Provence.
Mm-hmm. What kind of food in Provence?
Vegetables, yeah.
Just really, really food that just, there hasn't been really much to it. Very, very savory, very fresh herbs.
Simple quality.
You're going to be shopping at the market. It's going to be a lot of fresh vegetable, olive oil, garlic, herbs of Provence.
La Côte d'Azur, the French Riviera.
The Côte d'Azur is so varied. You know, the cliché is like Nice, you know, the mm-hmm. beaches. But the Côte d'Azur has also some magnificent villages, some little creeks.
Off of the coast, you mean?
Of the coast.
So you should go interior for this.
Absolutely. If you're going to be going, like, if you're going to hit the biggies of the Riviera, for one thing, I'd just like to just really define the Riviera. It starts, it's west, okay, no, east. I have a problem with it, my east and my west. East of Toulon.
East of Toulon.
Is the Riviera, the French Riviera.
And then to the Italian border.
Yes, and then it continues, you know, the Italian Riviera. But that part of it is called the Riviera.
Right. The Dordogne. British people like the Dordogne.
British people love the Dordogne.
Why?
Yeah. Well, because when they started to move down there, it was very cheap. Most of the French people didn't want to live anymore in those little villages down there. And a lot of places to be restored, renovated there. Right. And it was cheap to do. The climate was nice. Was still not too far from England. And a lot of
British people own homes there now.
Oh, yeah. It's completely colonized summer. Now. They've got
colonized by the British?
Oh, yeah. They've got the newspaper. They've got the estate agents. They've got shops.
Didn't they own that area during Richard the Lionhearted
time
also?
That's a good return of the
story. So they returned centuries later.
They're back.
We've never been able to get rid of them.
Can't get rid of those Brits.
No.
And they like the
back.
Foie gras. If your foie gras wasn't so good.
They just talk about the French. But basically, if we were not there, they couldn't live without us.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, ask them.
Yeah. Okay,
they're all in France.
I see what you mean. Yeah. I don't blame them.
No.
Vacation.
And I wonder,
France.
Actually, you know, in 10, 20 years, who's going to be living in England?
They'll all be in France if they can afford it. What about Alsace?
Alsace.
Beer.
Sauerkraut.
Wonderful Alsatian wine. Hmm. The Rhine Beve.
So you as a French person, like the Alsatian wine. I thought it was sort of a simple white German style wine.
No,
it's very light. It's so different from the rest of the white wines all around France. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's more sweet. It's more. It's very different. So yeah, people like the Alsatian wine in France.
Now, what region did I miss out of those? Is there any other great place?
Well, look at me.
Ah, Languedoc.
Languedoc.
See, people, I don't even know Languedoc.
Well,
entice
you know,
me.
It's the Languedoc. The Languedoc is the best place to be.
Pourquoi?
This is kind of like really. Okay, here you are, just this is like this turning point, you know, going from the Provence towards Spain.
Okay.
Basically, you have to go through the Languedoc region.
There you go.
So this was part, actually, it was at one point called Occitania.
With its own language.
With its own language, and it continues to have its own language. Like I live in this little village of 1,300 people.
Right.
About 30 kilometers west of Montpellier.
Oui.
And some of the old people, if, you know, I don't understand a word they're saying.
Really? In fact, that's what Languedoc means, right? The language
the language of the Oc.
Okay. Now, France is not all purely French. You've got Celtic Britons. Mm-hmm. You've got Basque people who are related to nobody in mm-hmm. Western Europe. You've got Corsica and a lot of Germans in Alsace. How is the status of these non-French parts of France? Is there discord now or are people getting along? I remember when I started traveling, Britain people couldn't even be Brittany music or names or something.
No,
like
it
that.
Has actually it has changed over the last 15 years. You know, there was a time which is kind of really interesting because the opposite is happening in the US as far as California, but we're talking about France, so we'll stick with France. As far as the regional languages, they come from the point as far as teaching foreign languages that if you do not recognize the culture and the language of that culture, you dismiss that culture by not allowing someone to speak their own language. So the language of a region is really the intricate part, you know, kind of the essence of that culture.
Okay, so Basque people, Britain people, Corsican people, they can still speak their dialect? Is it respected?
Oh, yes, and it's actually taught in school.
And it's actually growing?
I would say.
Yeah, so I don't
it's
think
a
it's
movement. Yeah, it's a movement.
But the thing is, threatening Paris anymore.
No, it's historically the French Revolution have kind of put a lid on all those things there, and they wanted France to be centralized, starting from Paris.
That's the whole thing, wasn't it? Centralized France around Paris.
So all those regional ideas there will disappear there. And
they were considered subversive. You didn't
absolutely,
want
absolutely, yeah, yeah. And all the way up to the 1960s, 1970s,
right,
where all those movements rediscovered their music, their identity, their culture, their language.
So there's a renaissance.
Absolutely. And from there, it started to rebuild itself. And in the strong region, like Corsica, like Basque, like Brittany,
okay, so
like
there
Alsace,
is a strong spirit in these places.
Absolutely.
Today.
There is. All right. There is, yeah. Language are not that much spoken there because a lot of people are realizing, it's nice to speak the language, but what am I going to do?
But the
with
local
it?
Pride is still there.
Local pride is still there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great, absolutely. Yeah.
We have some people on the phone that would like to talk to us. We have Randy on the line in Colorado Springs. Hi, Randy.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Any comments or questions for Patrick or Sabine?
Sabine, spell your last name.
It's Letteinturier. We have this in French. We just. You know, we are complex.
You like letters.
We love adding letters to just really to get you totally confused.
Le Teinturier.
Le Teinturier. Ah, wow. Ça c'est bien. Ça c'est bravo.
Merci.
Je vous en prie.
My language skills are interesting because I'm a very visual person. And so, you know, learning French is something you have to be able to hear. So I can read French novels, and yet listening to people speak is more difficult because all of those silent letters are not visible.
Yes.
Wow.
So it's difficult. It is probably the most difficult European language to learn, I think.
Well, you're doing a good job.
I love the language. I've been very fortunate. I had studied in high school and some college, but 8 or 10 years ago, I met a woman in our area where we lived who was native from France. She grew up in Paris, but her mother grew up, let me see if I can remember, in Limoges, and her father was from Normandy area. And so she was raised with more rural traditions than she would have been if she'd been raised by Parisian parents, you understand? But she taught me a great deal, and we spoke for an hour each week. I think it's the only way really to learn a language is to use it, you know. So still my language skills are not very good because my grammar's terrible.
You just need to come and visit France?
I need to come more often. We did get a tent, and I loved it. And it was so fun because Michelle told me that, she said, the people in Paris are a little...
They're so wonderful people.
Wonderful, but she said they're more snobby about the language.
No.
And I'll tell you, it's so cute because some of them would say, oh, speak English, because I don't think they liked my language. At first, they were a little less patient, but as I continued to speak, you know, I got them to smile. And then when we were in the more rural areas, you know, fewer people knew English, or at least were not as comfortable using it. And I found that they were very, very friendly and anxious to talk and anxious to share. So we had a wonderful time. It wasn't, you know, there really weren't that many people that didn't want to speak.
Well, you got the right attitude about the language, I think, Randy.
Yeah, but you need to continue practicing it.
Oh,
that's the only way you're going to get better at it.
Oui. We have to tell you something really funny. We were looking for Le Metro. And, you know, the train, we were supposed to be close to us, but apparently I misunderstood what the hotel clerk said. He told us to turn left, and we turned left, but he meant left out of the door of the hotel or the corner or something. So we were walking around looking for, and I kept asking these people, you know, on the street, où est le métro, over and over again, you know, where is the metro? And they'd point me, you know. Well, we finally found him. We had a really nice day. Well, the next day was, we were only there for about 3 days, and the next day we were wandering around Paris, and a young man came up to us, and he was from somewhere in the south of France, and apparently had never been to Paris. He was native. And he came up and he said, "Où est le métro?" So he was asking us, and I had just been asking the same question the day before. I just thought that was so much fun.
Well, you got that sentence down really well.
Well, I would prefer, when I go again, to spend more time with people rather than, we didn't have a lot of time. And, in other countries, we know people that live, for instance, in Germany and Norway and so on. But I don't have friends who live in France, so I would like to be able to get to know people in the rural areas and visit with the people in the country rather than spending time in the big cities and, you know, tourist things. Because to me, that's how to get to know people and to enjoy. And all of us are the same people. We just have to get to know each other's customs.
That's for sure. Randy, those are great ideas. Thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
Our exploration of France and its many cultures continues in just a moment on Travel with Rick Steves. Call us at 877-333-RICK or send us an email at radio@ricksteves.com.
Douce France, cher pays de mon enfance, bercé de tendre insouciance, je t'ai gardé dans mon cœur.
Rick. It's Travel with Rick Steves. We're visiting with my friends Patrick and Sabine, and we're exploring Western Europe's biggest and most diverse country, France. You know, Americans are so famous for not speaking French well, and a lot of our language is creeping into the French language. Is that considered a threat by the French government or the French people? What are you doing to preserve the French language in the global economy?
Well, there's plenty of things happening. I mean, a couple of years ago, they passed this law about having some ratios for quotas for Anglo-Saxon music on radios.
So what does that mean?
So that means that for most of the radios in France, they wouldn't be allowed to put more than 40% of non-French music on the radio. So some radios have turned the difficulty around, and they pass the French music all night long. And,
Really? They play that. Overall, they can play 40%
non-French. So
from midnight till six in the morning,
exactly.
All French, and
all
they can
French.
Have majority
and
English.
They can do whatever they want the rest of the day.
Oh my goodness!
And the French Academy, as kind of this, the people, the this bunch of old people working on the French dictionary there, they kind of said as well, we can't accept any English words in the language there. they're working on it. It just doesn't work.
It's hard. It's like stopping the tide, really.
You can't stop it. I mean, it's just...
Aren't there even tax penalties for businesses that have English words in their name or something like this?
No, that's a myth.
That's a myth. Okay,
no.
So there's...
No, because as we get into the high technology,
you
know, believe it or not, we have computers too in France.
Yeah.
And iPods and
do you call it software?
We call it, what do we call it? We call it logiciel. The software is logiciel.
Okay,
yeah,
so
we do translate. But I mean, you know, the English words are, I mean, you cannot live without them. I mean, I say we can and okay.
But you know, we when you look at the English language, it's full of French words as well. So,
but you just mispronounce them.
A lot of them. A lot of them are coming back. So that's fair enough.
And your language might be overrun with English words, and your countryside is overrun with tourists. Also, as French people, where do you go if you want a vacation in France without international tourists?
Well, actually, for me, I went to Brittany.
Brittany.
From the Languedoc, it's actually probably the furthest I could go, and I.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it because I camped. I went with my daughter, and we crossed actually central part of France via, and then just through Bordeaux, and then we went all the way to the Finistère, which is just like as you enter Brittany, you know, you continue down, and it was just absolutely a magnificent trip, and just really enjoyed it. Just too bad I didn't have enough time.
It's always the problem.
But, there's so many parts.
But you had a lot of time for your vacation. I would imagine the French sort of invented the vacation, I think, la vacation. And
five weeks minimal.
Americans have this romanticized image of French as just the joie de vivre and enjoying all the fine food and enjoying the vacation, Club Med, everything. Is that romanticized, or do you really have a forte for enjoying your free time?
It's a little bit of the two. I mean, it's certainly a little bit exaggerated and a little bit cliché, but it does exist, yeah, of course. I mean, people like their time off, and I mean, it's 35 hours a week for most of the people in France as well. And
35 hours a week? Is
35 hours, yeah.
So
it's not
hours.
Everybody, but it's kind of stepping back to 39 hours. But,
so you're having to roll back on that a little bit to compete in the global economy or something?
Absolutely. They realized that they couldn't put that on absolutely every company.
But, you know, as far as the work week and the week vacation, this is not typical of France. It's all over Europe. You wouldn't brag about the number of hours that you spend at the office. Is the amount of weeks that you're going to be going on vacation. And if you time it right, of tying those holidays, that's what really you aim for.
So the vacation is a big part of your year?
If you really play your cards right between the holidays and your 5 weeks, you can really have some really good weekend and some good time with your family, which I think is really essential.
Oh, yeah.
It is an interesting time because France is part of, you know, obviously the 25 countries of Europe, and we have to actually compete, you know, with other with other countries.
So
and
this
actually
is part of the EU, the whole higher
Yeah, absolutely. And so Europe. So France is actually has the highest... The cost of labor is the highest in France.
The cost of labor is the highest in all
France.
Of Europe, in France?
In France.
Why is that?
Well, because we have really wonderful social benefits, and to have social benefits, you have to pay into it.
Right.
There's a minimal wage, and an employer has to give, you know, five weeks paid vacation. And basically, for example, new countries entering the EU, there is a shift of the labor, and you know, you can also think of that. I mean, maybe that's getting a little more specialized, but yes, I mean, it is, you know, it's a bigger world.
Now, I imagine as French tour guides, it must get a little old always hearing about how tough Americans have a tough challenge figuring out the culture and everything, but I'm just a classic American, and I've had the benefit of 20 years of traveling with France and in France, and I know that the more I understand France, the more I appreciate it and enjoy it. You guys bring Americans around on your tours. What is there a fundamental difference in outlooks or something that you think causes this challenge for Americans when they go to France?
Formality. French people are very formal. The language is very formal. The approach of people is very formal. It's not being more polite. It's just being more formal, using more polite words. You've got to say again and again,
and
bonjour,
really
and au revoir. And it's very important to the French
French people.
Yeah. And you can't enter a shop somewhere and say hi. It just doesn't work. You've got to go bonjour monsieur, bonjour madame, and so on.
So you just spend some energy learning these fine points of the culture.
Absolutely. And it breaks a lot of barriers.
Tell me how France has changed from De Gaulle times.
I was too young, De Gaulle.
But I mean, that's a lot of Americans remember De Gaulle's France. That was really the chauvinistic France, I think.
No, it's the, chauvinistic is the idea that the American have of De Gaulle, and there was a complete misunderstanding about what De Gaulle was saying and what De Gaulle was wanting. All De Gaulle was saying is France want to rebuild itself,
Okay,
want
so
to do it itself. Want to have American companies and American money coming on the scene there, and need to, if you want to protect your identity, your culture, your language, you want to do it yourself. You've got your self pride as well, and you want to do it yourself. And a lot of that has been understood as, okay, thank you for saving us from the German, but go away from our country. And it was not as simple as that. It's not black and white like that. It's
so that's the post-World War II, 1950s kind of France, and you had been pretty much devastated by World War II.
Of course, yeah. There was a lot of work to rebuild the country.
And a lot of money coming in with the Marshall Plan.
Absolutely, yeah.
But the French, you had your great hero from the war, De Gaulle, running the country.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of pride on saying, we can do it ourselves.
I mean, it was a heroic struggle, and some people misunderstood it as chauvinistic.
That's our point of view.
I mean, that makes sense. I didn't think about that, but that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. All right.
And actually, you know, just to, as far as we're talking about De Gaulle, but interestingly, I mean, I picked up a magazine before I got to the airport, and there was about a study about the Mitterrand era.
Right.
You know, because actually we've had a few presidents since De Gaulle.
Sure.
And Mitterrand is one that has really marked the 70s and the 80s. I mean, the 80s particularly. He was a socialist president, and just kind of there was this wave of, you know, things were going to be different. And so it has really evolved. I mean, this is a country that is not about all historic buildings or historic monuments. This is a living country, and people are adjusting to a bigger world, and they travel more, and we have more technology. It's kind of unfortunate to keep those ideas of, like, for example, you know, I understand that, because some of my tour members, you know, are mentioning that, like, for example, there was this this older man that mentioned to me that the last time that he was here was, you know, after the Second World War. And he was part of the army and stationed there. And then he left, and it was his first time back. And there was that, you know, that kind of really bitter taste of, you know, here we are, we know we helped you. And he was still using the present, the present tense, you know, to describe that. And, you know, kind of went home just feeling, I mean, I cannot blame him, just feeling like, you know, here he went away from his family and things like that. But I mean, time passes, and just like now, I mean, you know, September 11, I mean, the Iraqi invasion, events changes, but I mean, we are moving on. There's other crises, there are other conflicts, and people, you know, are going along with that.
And Mitterrand was a huge, like an era in French.
Yeah, I remember.
That really brought the modern France.
I remember when he was elected. I mean, I was a student. I was finishing my studies, and I was living in Paris. And I mean, I remember going up to the Bastille. You know, it was a big party. There were people all over the subway, and it was like things were going to be different, and the people were going to be heard. And then, you know, he did two terms, and kind of slowly, you know, those hopes and just kind of went, you know, kind of
dissolved,
kind of dived. But he left some wonderful things, wonderful buildings.
Mitterrand, of course.
Huh? And he even has
decorated the modern art on the freeway. That's uniquely French, by the way. You don't see that anywhere else.
Yeah, I think actually Jacques Lang, who was the minister of culture, had quite a bit to do with, you know, bringing really
La Défense,
the art.
Is all of that part of Mitterrand?
Yes.
So the big, huge business park outside
of
Paris.
It was just, you know, okay, let's just join in as far as the business world.
We got Angel in Novato, California. Hello, Angel.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling.
I'm glad to listen to you folks.
Yeah.
Of course, we've only gone via train once. The rest of the time we've driven, which is a lot more fun, and you get a lot more out of just the places that you happen to want to go see. And if you like one place a little bit more than you thought you would, then you just stay long. You have that freedom versus having to live by the
with the train schedules.
The train.
Did you manage okay with the language barrier and so on, driving around France?
Oh, sure. It was, and there was no problem there. There's a lot of English being spoken and some Spanish out in the south, although it's more Catalan than the Spanish that they speak in, say, Madrid.
Yeah. Now, what sightseeing advice would you give people who are listening if they want to do something special in France?
Well, I would advise that they go either Languedoc or Alsace.
Languedoc or Alsace? That's interesting. So you like the fringe France.
I beg your pardon?
You like the get away from Paris and get out into the countryside.
No, I love Paris, too, and so does my wife. In fact, Normandy was beautiful and very interesting and good food, as well as down in the, I can't think of the area, but Amboise is one of the cities that's there. Good wine in that area. In fact, Burgundy is not only a gorgeous place with all these flowing hills and grapevines, but their wine, especially there in Beaune.
Beaune is great, yeah. They've got the Marché aux Vins. Did you go there?
Where?
The Marché aux Vins, the big wine market underground in Beaune.
No, we didn't get to go see that. No.
That's a brilliant experience for especially for any wine merchant or even a tourist who's just interested in developing a taste for good wine. You pay $10 and you get in and you can sample from 20 different wines that are opened.
My God.
In this beautiful subterranean kind of, you know, cellar.
I think if you would ask me which of all the wines I would prefer, I think that the Alsatian would be one. And then, of course, the Pinot Noir at the area we were just talking about in Burgundy.
Yeah.
And I think it surpasses Bordeaux.
All right. Hey, thanks for your call, Angel.
Oh, sure. You're welcome.
Okay, bye now. Bye. We have Carolyn on the line in Stroud, Oklahoma. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi.
How was your experience in France?
Well, it was one of the most wonderful experiences of our lives.
Why?
We found the people to be just so helpful and so warm and inviting that it was just a really good experience.
And where did you travel?
Well, my husband was working for the government, for the American government, in Paris for a week. And so I had a week to just travel or walk, actually. I walked most of the time all around Paris and saw all the sights. Then we took a train to the south of France. And everywhere we went, it was like God had someone standing there waiting to do some helpful thing for us.
Wow. That's quite a compliment. What's a highlight of your South France experience?
Well, I think one of the highlights was as we went on the train from Paris to the south of France, there was a woman sitting there in a seat right ahead of us, and we did take some French classes before we went, and so one of the things I learned to say, I don't know if I'm saying it correctly, but parlez-vous anglais was something I used quite often, and she said, yes, I speak English. So the whole trip from Paris to close to Nice, we carried on a conversation with her, and she and her husband managed a 5-star hotel at Saint-Paul-et-Vence, and she said that she would like to invite us to go home with her and stay in their hotel.
Whoa.
And she wanted, and I said, well, we were going to stay in a small, inexpensive hotel in Nice, and she said, well, how much were you planning on paying? I was kind of embarrassed to say, since I knew she had a 5-star hotel. But finally, I told her, and she said, well, both of you can go home with me, and you can stay at our hotel as long as you'd like for that same price. So her husband met us at the train station in his little sports car, and we managed to get all of our luggage on our laps and in his small trunk. And as we drove along the Riviera in his sports car, it was like a dream.
Wow.
Because there was a full moon and the sea was so blue, I'd never seen the Mediterranean before, and so it was just so beautiful.
Isn't
and then
great?
We drove up to their 5-star hotel, and all these people came scurrying out to help us into the hotel, and I'm sure she gave us one of the finest rooms that was there with a view out on the balcony of the Riviera. And also, as we were driving on or riding on the train, she wrote out an itinerary for us of everywhere that we should go to sightsee while we were there. And they made arrangements for our rental car to be brought from the airport in Nice up to the door of the hotel.
Wow, you sure hit the jackpot there, and that's not that unusual. I mean, so many people make good friends in their travels, and they're just bowled over by the hospitality and the friendliness they discover.
And as we were in the south of France going through Mentone, we missed a lot of meals, lunch times, because it seemed that, you know, if you didn't have your lunch by 2, then the restaurants were closed. So we were in Mentone walking around looking for a restaurant, which we never found, but there was a couple who walked up to me, and I asked them, parlez-vous anglais, and they said, well, they were from Canada. So I told her we were actually looking for a restaurant, but we hadn't found it. So she said, well, the restaurants were all closed at that time of day, but would we like to come up to their flat with them?
All right.
Then they just invited us to come up there and eat their fruit and visit with them and relax for a while. And those were two of the many experiences that we had.
Well, it sounds like you had a great experience, Carolyn.
Oh, we did. Yeah. It was just wonderful.
All right. We're going to have to run along now, but I want to thank you for your call.
Well, thank you.
Uh-huh. Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Parlez-vous en français. I've been talking with Patrick and Sabine. We're learning about French culture, and I want to thank you guys for helping us out.
You're very welcome.
Merci.
Thanks for having us.
Avec plaisir.
With pleasure.
With pleasure.
À très bientôt, j'espère.
I'll see you.
Au Languedoc, dans le Languedoc. Hein?
Oui.
Tu viens.
I have no idea what you said.
You say oui.
Oui.
Bien sûr.
Merci bien. A bientôt.
A bientôt.
See you in France. Uh-huh. Sabine Latoutier. Latoutier. Sabine. Sabine L. Sabine Latoutier. Oui?
Le teinturier.
Put. Call her Sabine Put.
Sabine Latoutier.
No, okay. Listen. Four syllables. Le teinturier. You can do it.
Latoutier. Right?
Superbe.
Oh.
Ah.
C'est bien.
Call us Patrick and Sabine.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington. Join us next time as we travel with Rick Steves.
Travel with Rick Steves is brought to you by American Airlines. With their new Advantage Award booking tool, it's easier than ever to book to over 800 Advantage Award destinations online at aa.com. American Airlines knows why you fly.